98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. NFL analyst Mark Schlereth talks football with Bickley and Murata. Brought to you by Earnhardt Ford in Chandler, proud sponsor of the Arizona Cardinals. No bull.
We talk NFL football every Wednesday. Every Thursday. Well, Wednesday, usually. We didn't have a show yesterday. I got confused on my days.
Yeah.
Forgive me. With Mark Schlereth, who joins us right now here on Bickley and Murata. Mark, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. We only have three more games to endure for the Arizona Cardinals, so things are getting better by the week.
Yes. Thank Lord. Hey, I only thank the Lord, and then it's spring training right around the corner, and you got everybody's loaded in Arizona. That's a great time. I mean, that's going to be a great time for you guys. Spring training time.
Oh, awesome. March in sports in Arizona, because you get the you get spring training, you get the tail end. If you got a good basketball team, which we haven't had in a while, you get the tail end of the season. You get March Madness. It is a good time. I will give that to you. Speaking of the Cardinals, when we talked last week, they're coming off the win against the Packers, and everybody says, how did they do that? How in the bag were the Packers to get Mike McCarthy fired in that game? And the Cardinals kind of answered that question the next week against the Lions. I know they're shorthanded, Mark, but how do you explain a performance like that at home against a really bad football team?
Yeah, it's, it is such a week-to-week league. And I think when you are that shorthanded and you are that bad, it doesn't take much for it to slide down, I used to say this about bad teams all the time when I was playing, and I was on, I was just blessed to be on a lot of good teams, but on the bad teams, man, they're just waiting for something bad to happen, mm-hmm. Because coaches always say stupid stuff like, hey, we're going to have to play just about a perfect game to win this. Well, that to me is like, I'm just waiting for those guys that have heard that all week to screw one thing up, because never a perfect game has been played. You're going to screw something up, and then it opens up the floodgates. Momentum shifts, and you go about your business, and you actually throttle a team. So, I think you look at just from a talent standpoint, quarterbacking-wise with a veteran quarterback, you look at just the overall talent of that football team. I think that, that Detroit's a more talented football team. I think their defense is exceptionally talented on all three levels. And so I think they're probably a more talented team than Arizona. But I tell you what, this league is crazy. It's such a week-to-week league. And it's hard. It's hard to be consistent when you're struggling like Arizona's struggled since week one.
All right, I apologize for all the snowflakes coding this question, Mark, but is there any rationale in which the Cardinals should shut down Josh Rosen? Because there's three offensive linemen who are now rookies, because he continues to get hit, because he's starting to be late on some of his reads, and because his inaccuracy has not gotten better. I'm seeing a guy who might starting to regress based on his circumstances. Is there any case to be built for giving him a ball cap and a clipboard?
If he's hurt, like if he's got something, that's going on physically, then I would say, yeah, there is a chance. I think there's always an opportunity to learn from beatdowns. I think one of the things that's amazing to me is, and I think this is just human nature, success, you learn far more from failure than you do success. Success is much more difficult to deal with than is failure, because when you have success, your natural ability to be humble about it, you're so busy patting yourself on the back that you don't really learn a whole lot about yourself during those times. At least that's my experience. It's the beatdowns that you take where you really learn about toughness and about your mentality and your preparation and the ways to go forward. So, I always feel bad for teams. I always am very skeptical of teams that have that one-year breakout where they've had a bunch of success, and you're like, oh, my gosh, they finally figured it out. And then the next year is when I worry about them. Like, that team is going to go in the tank because they can't deal with that. They don't work the same. They take things for granted. So I think you can learn a ton about yourself and about your football team when you struggle the way they've struggled. And so those things to me are valuable experiences, really valuable experiences. And the only way I say, hey, listen, man, I'm going to pull the plug on Josh Rosen's season, if he's legitimately getting hurt, like if he's legitimately got injuries. If not, I'm going to have him play.
Mark Schlereth, our weekly NFL guest. Of course, you can see him. He calls games on Fox for the NFL, 104.3 The Fan in Denver. He's got the Stink of Truth podcast. He joins us every week here on Bickley and Murata. And you know, a follow-up on Josh Rosen from what we've seen so far. A lot was made of this rookie quarterback class, Mark, as you well know. Five first-rounders. They are all starting for their respective teams now. And of course, none of them are close to being a finished product in this league. But based on what you've seen, your eyeballs, what they've told you, how would you rank the five rookie quarterbacks so far to this point of the season?
I mean, I think most of them are ranked incomplete. Obviously, Baker Mayfield is head and shoulders above everybody right yeah. now with what he's doing and the way he's playing. I called the Cleveland game last week, and, you know, somebody asked me, how do you explain Baker Mayfield? And I'm just like, he's all balls, man. Like, yeah. that dude is fearless, just absolutely fearless. And he has a chip on his shoulder. He has an attitude about him. And, you know, first thing you have to do to be a great leader, you got to be able to play. Like, ain't nobody in the NFL that's following a guy who can't play. You know, you could be the greatest guy in the world, man. You can have all the slogans and you can have, you know, you can articulate all those slogans. If you can't play, we don't care. And so he can flat play. And I'm telling you what, to watch him manipulate a pocket, you know, he reminded me a lot of Favre. Now, he throws it exceptionally hard, but Favre threw it on arm talent hard. He throws it on, like, he creates velocity through rotational force that starts at his toes. And when he lets it go, it's like, I am going to throw it through a brick wall. But he's incredibly accurate down the field. But the attitude with which he practiced, the way he led his team, the getting in the face of veteran players saying, this is not good enough, we're going to do it this way, they respect the heck out of that kid. And I'm telling you what, if the Cleveland Browns were stock, I'm buying. They have got a ton of talent, and I believe in that kid. Lamar Jackson is a different sort. Like, everybody else is, you know, under 50% completion, or under 60% completion, excuse me, more interceptions than touchdowns. Yep. Baker's the only one with over 60%, more touchdowns than, you know, than interceptions. And what he's been doing now that they made some corrections as an offense and they fired their head coach and they fired their offense coordinator, Freddie Kitchens took over, they've really been great. The other kind of part of that, or the juxtaposition, if you will, Lamar Jackson, it's crazy. Like, I played for 12 years. I blocked for a 2,000-yard rusher. I've been covering this game as an analyst for 18 years. So I'm talking about 30 years of being involved in the NFL. I have never seen an offense that created more gaping chasms in the running game than what Baltimore is doing right now. This is taking whatever collegiate RPO game, whatever collegiate zone running game, whatever that has been, and it's like a zone running game on the juice. I mean, it is like, you know, the thing that's been amazing, kind of the evolution of football, if you will, is that when you ran the ball in my day, it was always 10 on 11 because your quarterback didn't do anything, right? Mm-hmm. So it's 10 offensive players versus 11 defensive players. And then they started the wildcat stuff and this zone read stuff that they do now all over the league. And now it became 11 on 11 football, right? With the blocking schemes that Marty Mordenwick has created in Baltimore, it is 12 or 13 on 11. I mean, they are optioning three dudes and not blocking anybody at the point of attack. It's crazy to watch. And you're getting guys off the scrap heap that weren't on rosters week one that look like superstar running backs. I mean, it is amazing. Now, don't get in third and eight because Lamar Jackson can't throw. Like, yeah. Make no bones about it. Like, he is very inaccurate, very inconsistent. You know, mechanically, he's not very sound. He'll make some throws, don't get me wrong, because he's a great athlete. But you're not going to get out of, you know, you're not going to get yourself out of harm's way. But they're going to possess the ball. They're going to run it down your throat. And this is a historically good defense. I talked to John Harbaugh yesterday. He's like, we're historically good. If we would be in one of the top defenses of all time if we could just turn the ball over. And they're like top five in pretty much every category. They just haven't had any turnovers. they are phenomenal at all three levels. So
yeah.
Lamar Jackson is an interesting cat to watch. Everybody else is, you know, is going through the growing pains because they're not on good teams.
All right. I guess there's a bigger story here then with the NFL adapting and adopting some of the stuff that colleges do well. And finally, they're like, you know, not looking down at what college football does. And I think it kind of ties into what you've talked about in terms of the league wanting high-scoring games to sell to a new generation. And I think you're right on the money with it. Yet in the midst of all that, the Vikings fire a guy in John DeFilippo, who was just last year considered to be one of these up-and-coming offensive guys.
Right, yeah. You know, and sometimes, I think sometimes the problem that you get into is that you get into a situation, and a lot of offensive coordinators are this way, where everything is bent towards offensive football, right? And everything is bent to throwing the ball. And so you get into a situation where you're like, hey, listen, if I can put up huge numbers, like Kirk Cousins, you get Kirk Cousins who, you know, probably made $84 million based on fantasy numbers and not on real football, you know, based on fantasy football, not real football, because he puts up great numbers. But then when you see, hey, he's never really won against anybody that's above 500, and, you know, he's 0-7 on Monday nights, and he's like 4-24 against teams with a winning record. I mean, when you start going through it, it's eye-popping. And so if you're John DeFilippo, you're like, hey, man, if I can turn this around and we can put up those offensive numbers and this kid can win and we can erase all that negative talk, I'm on the fast track to being a head coach. And so what ends up happening to these offensive gurus or these offensive coordinators is they tend to forget that at the core, you still have to be able to, one, run the football for no other reason than to protect your offensive line. Your offensive line are the worst athletes on the football field. And if you sit back and you're going to say, hey, we're going to throw it, we're going to get in three wides, and we're going to do this, and we're going to protect the edges, then you're going to get throttled. And you look at Minnesota, and I have no idea because I haven't looked at the numbers, but I know last year they were either two or three in attempts per game. I guarantee you they're nowhere close to that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so essentially, you've got an offensive guru that's going to throw the ball and prove what a genius he is, and yet you're going to expose a group that I didn't think was very good last year. I thought they got protected by the way Pat Shurmur called plays, and it ended up working out for both Case Keenum and that offensive line and that whole team in general. And, you know, you tend to forget the complementary nature of football. If you possess the ball and you get attempts, like, I don't even really look at yards per carry anymore. Everybody gets fascinated by that, right? Well, shoot, half the defense anymore, even though defensive coordinators will tell you, hey, listen, here's our number one priority is we're going to stop the run. And then they play you in dime the whole game with six DBs. Really? That's your number one priority? No. If you can get 6 yards a carry, we'll give it to you because you're going to have to put 8 to 10 plays together. And we feel like you're going to get a holding call, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot, or you're going to the red zone and we're going to cram it in there and not get worried about beating over the top in the passing game. And we'll survive making you kick field goals because it's so much easier to score today. So I think a lot of offensive coordinators can't swallow their own pride.
Yeah.
And can't say, this is what's best for us to win. You know, here in Denver, man, I went off today because Von Miller said, hey, I didn't have the right mindset in San Francisco because I was two sacks away from breaking the all-time Broncos record set by Simon Fletcher. So I was going after the sacks, and that's why I jumped off sides 4 times, and that's why I cost my – like, you're kidding me. You're in a playoff game against the Niners who are 2-10, and a chance to go, a chance, you won 3 straight, you beat Pittsburgh, you beat the Chargers, you beat Cincinnati on the road. You've got a chance to finish 10-6 and put yourself right squarely in the playoffs. And what you're concerned about is building your brand and being the number one sack guy in Denver Broncos history. Like, what's wrong with this pitcher?
Yeah.
Like, hey, if that comes, great. But you know what I'm worried about? I'm worried about winning. I look at Brian Schottenheimer in Seattle. Brian Schottenheimer is probably never going to get a chance to be a head coach because maybe he will, but he has been one of these offensive coordinators who's been much maligned. You know what? Russell Wilson, they don't care. They run the ball That's what they're going to do. They don't care about numbers. They don't care about ego. They don't care about anything. They looked at themselves after 2 weeks in the season and said, what do we have to do to win? And they all made sacrifices. You sacrifice, you know, throwing the ball around and doing all these things because you know ultimately that's going to cost you victories. And they did it. And I tip my hat to Brian Schottenheimer because it takes a dude that's willing to swallow his pride and not think about ego. Good for him.
Yeah. Mark, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. We'll do it again next week.
My pleasure. Take care.
Mark Schlereth, NFL on Fox 104.3, The Fan in Denver, Stink of Truth podcast, and, of course, The Prevail.